Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast. Our guest today is Andrew Tkachuk from The Ghost Inside. Here goes.
Andrew Tkachuk, welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast.
Hello. Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. On this fine, what is it, Tuesday?
I have no idea. I don't think so. It's Wednesday. Dude, it's Wednesday.
We were supposed to do Tuesday, and I rescheduled. That's where I got confused. Don't judge me too hard.
I'm not judging. No judgment. So, you know, one thing I've noticed is the drummers that I've played with who are the best drummers tend to be good at another instrument. I've noticed that it helps them understand music better, like understand the songs and where they're supposed to go better. So I guess I wasn't surprised to find out that you're actually a good guitar player, but it's always cool to find out when someone that's known for one thing is actually good at another thing too.
Yeah. And thank you. I don't know about good, but, I can palm mute some chugs pretty well. That's about it. That's all I'm good for. If you're looking for a real guitar player, you talk to John Brown there. Cause I just play breakdowns. I did a little riff along to the end of Eye the Destroyer. One of my favorite riffs ever. It took me a long time to get it down to where I was like, I could film that. I've noticed that too with drummers and just peers of mine as well, that the drummers of bands will also be guitar players and do a lot of the writing and stuff. I know Cameron from Born of Osiris is one of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many other guys off the top of my head I can't really think. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't know what it is about it.
Also, when guitar players learn drums, even if they don't become great drummers, it helps them write better parts because, you know, guitar players these days all write drum parts, and most of them suck at writing drum parts. But actually learning drums helps you write for a human as opposed to like an octopus or something.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's gotta be the truth right there. Yeah, because I know for myself, you know, being a drummer, even though I've played, I actually started guitar a little bit before I ever touched drums. So I've been playing both about the same time, but ever since drumming became like kind of my main thing with bands and touring and stuff, like I've always like approached guitar almost more in a percussive way, which is kind of why, you know, my solo stuff that I release independently is like, I fucking hate the word djent, but you know, just encompasses every single thing I like about heavy music, especially the drums and guitar, of course. And it's such a percussive with all the like staccato dead note rhythms and stuff. I mean, that's just my favorite thing about guitar. So I kind of always go into it like with a drummer's mind on guitar.
Do you apply that to your drumming at all? Like that style? Cause what you're known for isn't really in that genre.
Right. No, I absolutely apply it. Like what you hear on actually our newest, the newest Ghost Inside record, the self-titled one, you'll hear a little bit more of that flavor with the kind of almost genty drumming, but it's just peppered in very, very like lightly. But live, I'm one of those guys live that my band probably secretly fucking hates me because I just get in the zone and I'll throw in like stupid ghost notes here and there. And just like when I'm just grooving and like in the zone, I'll just throw in stuff that's not exactly on the record. And actually, to go back to Misha, I mean, a lot of that started with me when my old band toured with Periphery in 2009 and I toured with Halpern. I wrote the bulk of those first two For the Fallen Dreams records that were on Rise. And then in 2011, joined TGI. So yeah, in 2009, toured with Matt Halpern and just, I mean, obviously you guys know him. He's a fucking alien freak of nature.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah, dude, I absolutely love him to death. I still talk to him all the time, and he would basically just put on clinics for the entire, it was the Thrash and Burn tour, so it was like, John Bachlin was actually on that tour as well. He was in Devil Driver, but it was like 10 or 11 or 12 bands, and every drummer would just be sitting around annoying the entire package like it's at a guitar center all playing drums with Matt being the ringleader. And I mean, I picked up a lot of influence from Matt as far as my style. I ended up adopting so many things that he would do that people started being like, dude, you kind of remind me of Halpern, even with like your swag when you play live, like you kind of like look like him, which I didn't even mean to like look like him. It just, that's how much of an effect he had on me, I guess. So,
how does that translate to guitar? Cause I want to know more about your percussive approach to guitar. So, and I've always wondered about things like taking paradiddles, for instance, and turning them into guitar exercises and, you know, drum rudiments and turning them into like guitar fills. So I've always in my mind seen a link between drums and especially the right hand work on guitar. So I want to know more about your thoughts on that.
It's funny because when it comes to like drum rudiments and shit, dude, I don't know any of them. I have never been the guy to know my rudiments and to practice rudiments, which is not a brag at all. It's like, how have I not done this by now?
That's just kind of like the drum language I know, but I just mean in the way that you think about it, I'm curious. Fuck rudiments. Let's pretend they don't exist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. When I'm playing guitar, I don't know. I don't really know how to explain it. Honestly, it's like, it's just something will be in my head, some weird rhythm, and I can just hear the drums in my head and like it translates into that right hand. Like, the exact weird rhythm I'm thinking of I don't even know how I do it. I just do it. It just comes naturally. I'm not even worried about it being human or sounding like a machine or not. I just, when I pick up a guitar, I mean, sometimes I'll just pick it up and start going just as like to warm up, just doing that bleed rhythm just to like warm up. And then sometimes that'll just flow into some other riff with a similar triplety kind of feel, and it just makes sense to me. I don't know why. I don't really have to put a lot of thought into it. Like, if I have an idea, I'm able to like transcribe it like in Reaper, in, you know, not sometimes it goes better than others. Sometimes it's like, oh, that did not go think how I thought it was gonna. But I mean, I don't know. It's definitely always like a rhythm thing first for me. First and foremost, pretty much all the time, because I'm not really a leads guy, like I said, you know.
Has it always been that way? Like, that you are able to imagine something and then it just comes out? Or is that something you had to work towards?
No, it's just always been that way since I was young. I was like 14 or 15, 16, and I was in high school. And the first thing I ever started even attempting to mess with, like, music production-wise was Fruity Loops, which I'm sure a lot of people probably started on Fruity Loops. And I taught myself how to program drums that way. I would make guitar samples. I would find like a chug from like a Between the Buried and Me song where there was like a gap where there was just like a chug, and I'd slice it out and make that a sample and make this weird like electronic grindy shit that sounds like Daughters meets Number 12 Looks Like You meets Tony Danza. And like that was from a really early age. And then I would find that I could kind of do some of that stuff on guitar, like mostly the rhythm stuff. So then I started tracking it that way, and it just went from there. And it's always just been like, oh, that would be cool. And then I just go into a room and plug my guitar in and do it. And it's always been like that for me.
It's weird. Like, I need an idea, like some sort of a theme.
Yeah.
To start with. Yeah. Like, I need to form a theme. So usually that just means spitting out shitty riffs until the theme appears. And then from there, it's just boom, just happens fast. Like, the rest happens fast.
Yeah.
But like, I don't hear things in my head or anything like that. I've always wanted to, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah. You know, well, sometimes I'll hear it and then I'll go try to execute it and it is dog shit. And I'm just like, wow, that sucked. And like, sometimes also, here's one thing too, is like, you know, a lot of people will say, or I've heard people say, like, you know, a musician will need inspiration, but a producer can just do it at the drop of a dime, you know? And I guess I'm not a producer, because I really, whenever I try to like, just, all right, I'm going to go write something and like try and force it out, it usually, I'd say 95% of the time, comes out like, this sucks. This isn't good. You know, it's usually when some sort of idea will just pop into my head. I can, it's I'm telling you, it's insane. Sometimes I can hear like full production mixes of what I'm thinking in my head. It's insane. And I'm like, how do I get that out?
How do you remember it long enough?
Well, the thing is, I either forget it or I'm at home and I can go straight in and try it out. That's when the good stuff comes out, is when like it'll be at night or like in the shower or something weird. But like sometimes I'll just be sitting on my couch and I'll haven't written anything in weeks. And then all of a sudden I'll just hear something. This just happened to me like 4 days ago with like a new TGI thing. I was like, ooh, like it just popped into my head. I was just like sitting on the couch, heard that tempo. It was like 188 BPM. I went in and it came out with something fucking new and awesome. And it's just always been that easy for me as far as like getting the process started when writing anything.
Interesting. So I get all that stuff once the process has been started. So like I will actually hear things and have those moments of like the light bulb turning on in the shower or whatever, but only once something has been started. Like I don't have the ability to just think up something out of nowhere and then it's music. Like there, yeah. once there's music though, then where to take it, like how to change it, what to add to it, all that shit, that can happen in my head. And then it's pretty quick to actually translate it. But it's, yeah, that initial, what I'm impressed by and like jealous of is the initial spark coming from your head. Cause I just don't get it. And I've actually been curious about that forever. Like I used to think about, you know, I used to study like classical composers back when I was in high school and stuff. I can hear the stories about Mozart writing entire symphonies while hanging out with a girl or something.
Yeah, insane.
Because he was badass. And then going home, like ditching the girl and going home and just writing it down. I don't know how much of those stories are true, how much is embellishment, of course.
Well, thank you for comparing me to Mozart. I do appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kidding. Well, yeah. It's like, you know, Mozart, TGI.
Yeah, right. Same world, same tours, you know. But no, yeah, like it's, you know, and sometimes, you know, since that happens with me, I'll run into this issue sometimes as well where it'll happen a lot in a short period of time where I'll be like writing. This happened with my last EP, and I'll go to write something and that was in my head, and I'll be like, oh, this just sounds way too much like that one. Like, oh, I've already done this riff. This is just like barely different. So I run into that issue a lot when this happens. Yeah. So, and that gets frustrating. Sometimes that'll discourage me and I'll be like, man, just turn the computer off and wait till something else strikes. And then another thing too, that's weird is, again, going to my newest solo EP, it's called Chromesthesia. Have you guys heard of this? You guys know what this is? I've always had it and I didn't know there was a fucking name for it.
Explain it to people who don't know what it is.
Yeah, so it's a phenomenon that when you listen to like music, sometimes people can hear it just from like random noises in the environment. But like, I think it's most common with music. Most songs, I'll hear it and it'll make me like think of or like see a color. And I'm not talking about I'm like hallucinating this image in front of me like I'm on shrooms or something. I just like can see it, but it's not there. Like, I'll hear a song and I'll be like, oh, this is like green. This is like a really green song. Like, oh, I'm hearing blues, purples in this one. I found it out too early age, like probably will regret this coming up shortly, but I would always just like fall asleep listening to music way too loud in my headphones as a kid in my CD player. And like I would close my eyes and like even before I fell asleep, I would be like, it's like when my eyes were closed, I could see these like clouds of green or like just what looks like blurry color. It's so weird. And I just always was like, oh, well, that's just how it is. And then not that long ago is when I found out it was called chromesthesia and that a lot of people have it and some people don't. And I'm like, what the fuck? That's crazy. And that's what I was like, well, it's an instrumental EP and I need a theme. So there you go. that's what it's going to be. So it worked out. But that's another, like, you know, kind of like you were talking about how Mozart was just like, just writing whole masterpieces in his head. It's like, I wonder if some of those guys saw color too when they were writing. just an interesting thought I had to touch on with the Mozart thing. Art, you know, get it?
I know quite a few people who have it.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was for me. I didn't identify it because I just, like, thought that was just normal. And, like, I just didn't really think it was that crazy because I've been used to it ever since I started, you know, hearing music. So I just never really thought anything of it.
I don't think it's that crazy. I don't know how rare it is or not. I just happen to know quite a few people who have it.
My friend Chris Ruby, who used to play guitar in the Devil Wears Prada, he's done all the artwork for me in my projects. And I remember my first one I ever did, the first artwork, I was talking with him about it. I was like, oh, I'm seeing like yellow in this. So can you throw some of that in the artwork and some teal, some purple, because these are the vibes. He's like, oh, I'm hearing this and that, because he also has it. So we kind of, yeah, he's been good for the visual side of the project. But yeah.
Does he hear the same colors that you hear?
Sometimes and sometimes not. Sometimes he'll hear different things.
So who's right?
I don't really know if there's a right or wrong. Yeah, I know. It's like, yeah, I wonder that too, though. Which one's right? Which one's correct?
I don't see colors, but I see something. It's weird. It's hard to explain. Like there's a shape.
Yeah, I see the shape too.
No, but like every song, sound, riff, chord, there's like a shape. I don't know how to explain it. It's just a shape in my head.
Okay, so when I was researching chromesthesia, I saw someone talking about that with the shapes. And there, I guess chromesthesia is a form of synesthesia, and synesthesia is kind of that one that covers all those things, like colors, shapes, sounds, visuals, this and that. And I've heard about the shapes one. Yeah, that's not something I see.
It's hard to explain because it's not like a real shape.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to draw it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when I said a second ago, I was like, oh, I see shapes too. I was meaning that kind of cloud I would see, but it moves. What you're saying is something different, and I've read about it too, and that's just as interesting to me as the color thing. Like, that would be wild to, like, see a shape when you're hearing music. That's crazy.
I'm about to do a total left turn. I want to hear about your right-hand picking technique.
I don't really know much to say about it. I just, what more do you want to know about it, I guess? Give me some more.
Well, what I want to know about it is what kind of picks you play. Does that matter to you?
Yeah, well, picks do matter to me. And sometimes I'll use like different thicknesses, especially recently. You know, if I'm whipping out the 8-string, I mean, I got these Horizon Devices picks right here, if you can see, John, the little blue ones. And this one is one of the 3.0 ones.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so, and I don't always use it, but sometimes if I want to track like a really hard palm muted part, I'll just chug the shit out of my strings with that thing. And it feels nice. Sometimes, though, I think my go-to is like an 88. I think that's my all-around. I've been using the Dunlop, the Flows, or what are they called? Flow? Those a lot. Yeah, it's and you know, I like the amount of grip on it, and I think that's my go-to. But sometimes I'll switch it up. Sometimes I'll, you know, it depends on what the part is. But yeah, influences, though, I don't know, man. Probably the typical one, Frederick Thordenal. You know, I'm obviously a fucking Meshuggah nerd, just like every other gent fan, you know. He's like our demigod. Hetfield, dude. Hetfield, Metallica, obviously. The down picking.
Did you sit there and learn that stuff and learn how to down pick that way?
I never really, no. See, like, dude, the weird thing about all that stuff is like, and back to like the not knowing all my rudiments thing is like, I never, it's stupid. It's a stupid thing.
It's not stupid. I just want to know where it came from. Like, I'm most interested in if someone has a non-traditional path towards doing this stuff, it's more interesting to me.
I think I'd probably be non-traditional because I'm not really a practice guy. I don't really ever warm up or practice. I'll play guitar just to play guitar. And sometimes if I'm trying to learn something super complex, I'll sit down and try and practice it over and over. But it doesn't happen very often. I'll just kind of do it. And I've just kind of, over the years and how long it's been playing guitar, I've just kind of figured out where to put my hand to for different palm mutes. If I want it to be like open, I'll like put it at the end of the bridge, like as really far down, so it's like a super resonated chug, you know. Or if I want that tight digging sounding, you know, genty, palm mute. You know, I've just figured out naturally, I think, where to put my hand, and then I think just being a drummer helps me with the rhythm. I can just kind of translate it from drums to my hand. I guess that's my way of explaining it. Yeah, I would just.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's how I do it, I think.
So it's almost like another drum.
Kind of. Yeah, I think that's how I usually go about it. All rhythm. And like the ghost notes thing, yeah, I mean, it's really just drumming on a guitar. When you're like muting that string, like, and you put the right amount of pressure on the string where to mute it, you're really just doing like a snare roll on it, kind of. It just in the pattern you want. It's definitely percussive, which is why I like, you know, that style of metal so much.
Well, two things that I want to communicate to people listening. There's a lot of people who are real hard-headed about picks. And I'm not suggesting that people just play with picks that they don't like or something like that. But different picks sound different. And sometimes if you're going for a certain sound, certain feel, and you're just not able to achieve it, there's simple things you can tweak that can make all the difference. Little things often have big results, and changing a pick can be the difference between the riff sounding right and the riff not sounding right, all other variables being the same. So like if you're strumming chords versus chugging, it's very, very different. Like if you try strumming chords with like a medium pick versus a 3.0, it's going to sound completely different. It's not going to sound the same at all. Plus, where you put your hand when you're muting is everything. I've noticed that a lot of players who can't seem to get good tone in their hands, a lot of it stems from them not knowing what pick to use, what angle to pick at, where to put their hand, and where to pick.
All of that's so true.
I mean, if they just got that together, they'd sound better.
Yeah, sometimes even too, like I'll change what pick I'm using if I change the guitar. Like, you know, on my newest EP, there's two songs that are in a 7-string drop G sharp. There's one in drop F on an 8-string, and then one or two that are in double drop D on a 6-string. For those double drop D ones, I have the coil split, and I'll put it in the up position so it's got that twanginess. And for that, I'll use like a thinner pick because I find that the tone is just better for whatever reason with like a thinner pick than I was using for the other song or whatever, you know, because it just sounds better. So sometimes I'll switch up picks for different guitars too. I'll just kind of play around with it until I hear what I think sounds right.
The lack of self-awareness about maybe there's something better out there. Maybe there's something better for a different use case scenario out there. Not even willing to check that out. That's nuts. And what it reminds me of is when I first started recording, well, not first, that was a few years in, this local band. This was before my band got signed, before I started working with signed bands. And I was like working with the local Atlanta metal bands. And I remember one came in, and I had known them for a while, so we weren't strangers or anything. The guitar player brought a 5150, block letter in, and I own a block letter 5150 as well. Exact same model, exact same year, everything. It was the exact same amp. Okay, so here's the only difference. Mine was regularly maintained, biased, had fresh tubes, all that. His had the tubes that he had had in there for 8 years, the tubes that were in it when he bought it. And it sounded like fucking shit, like 5% away from the dying tube sound. Like, it was garbage. And so I was totally cool with him using his amp, a block letter 5150. But how about instead of using your exact amp, you can use your amp, but a better version of it, mine, that's
yeah,
maintained and has new tubes. The guy got real mad. Like, I got fired off that one. He wouldn't be my friend after that. Like, he was like, no, bro, this is my sound. This is my sound. This is my sound. Like, dude is a fucking idiot.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to force him to use even a different kind of amp or like telling him he had a wrong choice or whatever. His tubes are just about dead. Like, it's kind of like if a drummer bought a drum set and left the same heads on for 5 years and was like, no, this is my sound, bro. Yeah, I know. That's... I've seen it too. It's my sound, bro.
Wow. Is it your sound or are you just fucking lazy? That's my question.
Or are you saying your sound is shit?
Right.
Yeah, they worshipped bands that like Andy Sneap would mix, so they wanted to sound good.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it was like, you know, the unironically, you know, bad, weird, muddy, buzzy, fuzzy tone, you kind of get that, but like, no, not if you want, especially modern metalcore, man. You're going to need to change them tubes at least, my guy.
Yeah, modern metalcore in like 2003 or 4, after Killswitch was already big and like, As I Lay Dying was just like popping off and like, you're supposed to sound good. Like those genres are supposed to sound good.
Yep. And Adam D too, kind of changed the game with Beast.
Total Beast. I want to hear about working with Putney and like the whole experience in Florida.
Oh man, it was fucking awesome. I'll tell you what, it was awesome till it came time to do drums.
Just so for people listening, where you guys recorded was at the Audio Compound in Florida, which is where is the studio owned part by A Day to Remember, Jeremy by A Day to Remember with Andrew Wade, and then URM used to have Studio B. Like that's where we did Nail the Mix for several years, and that's where a lot of the initial Riff Hard footage was shot. And so I don't remember if we were out by the time you guys went there or not. Maybe we were out by then. I know I wasn't there while you were there.
I definitely think you were out because by the time we went there for this last record, Neil
had the room. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Had taken Studio B. But yeah, I was going to ask, AL, where are you located?
Me personally?
Yeah. Cause I thought Florida. Okay. Atlanta. I thought Florida because of the early URM stuff. I was like, oh, he must be like an Orlando guy. But no, okay.
No, I moved to Orlando in 2011 to go work at Audio Hammer for a few years.
Cool.
Back to Atlanta at the end of 2014 when I started URM. But the thing is that the Audio Compound was like they started talking about that, building it in 2014. And I had moved to Atlanta, but like I still had my house and my studio and needed to like sell it. And Andrew put up just a post that there's a room available for a future studio, but it's going to be ready in months, in a long time.
Yeah.
And I just like hit him up right then and there, like 5 minutes after he posted. It was like, I want it.
Oh, wow. So nice.
That was it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I didn't even live there. I didn't even live there anymore, but I reserved it. And just thinking that I needed a place for my gear and we would eventually need a place to film.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because so 2014, yeah, because we did Dear Youth at the time Jeremy and Andrew were living together and the studio was in their house, like attached off the house.
Oh, yeah, that place. Kind of,
yeah, so that's where we did Dear Youth. So, yeah, they must have gotten the Audio Compound the next year, which fuck that. The Audio Compound is so sick, dude. What a great setup that place is, man. I love that place.
Yeah, what an upgrade.
For real, dude. And it's even got like the apartment. I think Andrew was in there for a while, but there was bands could stay there if they wanted. But actually, so our newest record, we only did pre-pro there. We recorded the record in Belleville, New Jersey at Machine Shop.
Okay, so Putney went down to Orlando and did pre-pro with you guys there?
Yep, because we had Jeremy from A Day to Remember do production as well, mostly with vocals, but he just had a kid at the time, and we were like, well, we don't want to fucking make Jeremy like leave his kid and be away from home, so...
Wow, you're such nice people.
Well, yeah, well, we're super, super tight with Jeremy and stuff, so like we wanted to make sure he was home so he could be with his family. And Will was totally cool with just meeting us there and using the main studio to do our pre-pro. So we did like 2 weeks, and then I think we came back for like another 2 weeks, a few months after our comeback show. And then once all the pre-pro was done, we went like late summer out to New Jersey and tracked the record there, and we were there for about, I don't know, 3 weeks or a month, and then went back to finish like two more weeks of tracking. And it was awesome, dude. It was such a good experience. Putney is fucking amazing. And like,
dude, his work ethic is insane.
He's a fucking madman. And, dude, just, me and him, like, we like the same things. We like the same bands. When we were writing together, you know, it was just, the guys would like, you know, Jim from our band was saying he was like watching just mad scientists work, because we would just riff off each other so naturally and so seamlessly. Like, we just worked together so well. Me and him kind of had such a similar brain when it came to writing and riffing. So writing the record was pretty easy and pretty seamless and fun. And yeah, that studio in New Jersey is something else. It was in this building that was like super, super old. And, you know, I'm an amputee.
Yeah, we shot a URM course there. It's definitely...
Oh, right, yeah.
In an area that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, dude.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and there's like flights of stairs, and I have a prosthetic leg, so stairs are like my enemy. So going upstairs a bunch was kind of a pain in the ass.
Oh, God, that sounds like a serious inconvenience.
It was, but like, I was having such a good time making the record that I just like sucked it up and didn't even fucking complain or care about it. Whatever. It was all good. It was really only when I was doing drums.
Oh yeah, because the drum room was upstairs.
Top floor. Yeah. But dude, yeah, it was a fucking awesome experience. And I love the record. I'm super, super proud of it. Once again, I did like the bulk of the writing for like guitars and stuff and on the newest record for Ghost Inside, and Will wrote a bunch as well, and it just worked out so well. And the mix, I'm a huge fan of Putney's mixes, and it just like turned out to be the exact comeback record that we wanted, you know, across the board basically. So
out of curiosity, as a musician, what is it about a producer that makes you want to work with them and then work with them again, I guess?
I seriously, seriously stand by it. Personality is huge. I think when you're working with a producer, you need to be in an environment that's with and around people that are like-minded and like you can riff on with your personality and your sense of humor and get along. You know, that I think that's huge, because if you're working with someone you don't get along with, that shit's going to channel into the record and it might not be turn out as well or something. You know, I'm a big believer in that. And other than that, you know, I'd say a big one is the producer's, you know, catalog. What have they done? What other bands have they done? Can I see this person or this producer like, you know, working for my band? That's a huge one. You know, I think those are the main things, is like getting along with them personality wise and really studying to see if they're the right person to do your band. Like, you know, we knew that Will had done, you know, several of our peers' bands and produced so many bands like that we're friends with and that we love. And we wanted to have a heavier sound on this record. And he's the man for it, with like Acacia Strain and, you know, all those bands, Knocked Loose and stuff. So we wanted his rawness that he's known for. So it's just doing your research. But I think I would have to say number one is that getting along with him, that personality.
Yeah, because I feel like it's assumed that anyone you go with is going to be good.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to talk to someone if they're not, like, fucking awesome. So there's got to be other reasons, like connect on an artistic level, connect on a personal level. Because I feel like the skills part is just, I mean, if you don't have the skills, you're not even in the conversation.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Or at least shouldn't be in the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, some people do slip through the cracks. Or jump the line somehow. But Andrew, I think this is a good place to end the episode. I want to thank you for hanging out. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I've been wanting to come on this for a while. You guys had Chris and Zach on while ago, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, that's cool. Well, I'm glad you had just me and they had to do it together. Assholes.
That's what they get.
It's awesome. I had a blast. Love them to death. I appreciate you guys having me on, man.
Thanks so much, dude.